For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, we are holding on page 138 and 139 at the bottom. We're going to pick up on our story. We are in the story of the second episode that the Torah records of the two brothers, Yaakov and Esav. And what we are now in the middle of is, just reading through this, it's a very long story. We're doing this in the story of the stealing of the blessings, in which Yaakov sneaks in to his aging elderly father and takes the blessings from under Esav's nose, if you will. And we are reading through the story. So again, what we're doing is we're going to go through all of the text, going to get through the whole story, and then we're going to go back and delve into the commentators. This is a very long story. This is probably our fourth or fifth session just reading the story without even discussing any of the commentators. Where we are up to on the bottom of page 138 is in which Esav has come into his father with his own matamim, delicacies which he had prepared, and he presents them to his father, and his father says to him, "Who are you?" Being that he had just eaten a sumptuous meal and given out the blessings to what he thought was Esav, and turns out, of course, as we know, to be Yaakov. Yaakov had responded Esav says, "What do you mean, who am I? I am your firstborn. I am Esav. I have done what you have asked of me." Yaakov says, "Well, then who is the one who came in here and I blessed him? And indeed he will be blessed," was Yitzchak's statement upon realizing what has happened, in which he sort of puts his stamp that whatever has happened is done, and Yaakov, who has now received that blessing, will indeed be blessed. Esav lets out a bitter cry and says, as we pointed out at the end of verse 34, "Bless me too, Father." Instead of saying, "I hate that guy," or "I'm going to get him," his first gut reaction is, "But give me a blessing too." And Yitzchak responds in 35, "Your brother has come with cleverness and taken your blessing." And Esav, this I think was the last verse that we had done, we're in the middle of this last week. Esav says, "Well, is this not why they call his name Yaakov? Vayaakveni zeh for amayim, that he has outwitted me now these two times. Es b'chorasi lokach, he took away my birthright." That we had studied, that was the first episode in which the sale of the birthright takes place. And now he is taking away my blessing. And he said, "Have you not reserved a blessing for me?" Esav says. Okay, now let's just finish up on this verse before we go any further. So two very interesting things that Esav says. Number one, he says, I've been swindled twice, he says. He took my birthright, and now he swindled me out of the blessing. So I think we began discussing this a little bit last week, but Esav clearly views the sale of the birthright, last episode that we studied, the first episode, as it also an indication of being swindled, which we don't necessarily see in the story there. We see that he comes in, he's famished, he wants to have some food poured into him, and Yaakov says, "Sell me the birthright." But there seems to be a dialogue. What's in it? What do I get? Right? That's how Rashi describes the whole dialogue. And he says, "Well, you're going to work in the Beis HaMikdash. You have these responsibilities or those responsibilities." And he says, "I don't want it. I'm going to die. Either I'm going to die on a simple level out in the fields. I'm going to die from all of these requirements. I don't want it." And then he sells it. Of what value to it is it to me? And then he gets up, he disparages the birthright, he goes back to his business. And yet here, when Esav reflects back upon that, he says, "I've been swindled twice. First he took my birthright." Look at the language he uses. He does not say, "He bought my birthright." Es b'chorasi lokach. He took away my birthright. And now he took my blessing. He uses the same verb for both instances. He took my birthright and he took my blessings. Even though one, we would say, one was a sale. And this one, all right, we'll give you Esav. This one, he took it from underneath you. But even that, the second one, we could have said maybe was by rights, because indeed he has the rights of the firstborn. Which we mentioned last week as well, that one might have made the argument that when Yaakov bought the birthright, he should therefore be entitled to this blessing. Yet we don't see that playing itself out in the story for some reason as well. We raise that as a question. Why does he have to steal it anyway? Why be so sneaky? Why not come into his father and say, I bought this. I bought this years ago. I am entitled. But he does not do that. In any case, that's Esav's response. He ties in the word Yaakov, the name for Akev, for heel. The reason why Yaakov was really named Yaakov was why? Because the Torah says he was holding on to the heel. And here Esav comes up with a new reason. You know why they call him Yaakov? Because Yaakveni also means to be clever or to outwit. And therefore Esav says that's why they call him Yaakov, because he's now done that twice. And even though the Torah gave us a reason why he's called Yaakov because he was holding on to the heel, Esav now has additional reasons, he darshans, why he should be called that because of that. Yeah.
Yeah, I just find it interesting that Esav cares so much about getting the blessing. That's not the Esav.
Excellent. So we see here clearly a deep-seated, passionate care for the blessing.
Yeah.
That not only does he want it so badly, and we see in his response when he finds out that indeed the blessing has been given, he does not lash out with, at first, let me, you know, I want to get at my brother, but did you not save, give something for me? Have you not saved any blessing for me? Why don't you pass me plenty on the table? Okay, so that's where we're up to. So that sums up. Now we're back into the story. So we have our dramatic scene. We have Yitzchak, the older man, can't see, sitting with a second sumptuous meal being presented to him, saying, it's already over, he says. I already gave the blessing out to someone else. Esav is the one who names it and says it was my brother Yaakov, which was presumably pretty obvious at that point. And when Esav asks for another blessing, his father says, I have nothing to give you. He's already been given it, and he will indeed be blessed. Now, I just want one other point we pointed out. When Esav here says that I've been outwitted twice, he took my birthright. That's probably, to the best of our knowledge, the first that Yitzchak, the father, has ever found out about that.
If he said it out loud.
If he said it out loud, okay. It would seem that way, but you know, it's possible they didn't say that out loud. Why? Okay, let's focus on Dina's point for a second. What proof would we have that Esav did not actually say this statement of I've been outwitted twice out loud? We have very interesting proof. I don't know if this will work or not, but it says, and he said, it doesn't say, and he said to his father, like it says almost every other place, whenever there's a dialogue. But in any case, presumably he said it out loud. That would be my first guess. But in any case, this would be the first time that Yitzchak is hearing about it, assuming he does say it out loud. Okay, let's get to Yaakov's response. And now, Yitzchak's response. So now, Yitzchak, you're the father, and your eldest son is pleading with you for a blessing. Did you not reserve something for me? Now, if indeed, let's just put ourselves back into the story, if indeed Yitzchak, the father, had reserved something, who would that really have been reserved for?
Yeah.
It would have been reserved for Yaakov. If it had played out in Yitzchak's head the way that he was thinking it would play out, the blessing that he gave was really being given to his eldest son. And had he reserved anything, it would be given to Yaakov, the younger son. So now Esav comes in and says, but he stole my blessing. Didn't you reserve something for me? So had anything been reserved, it would have been in Yitzchak's back pocket waiting to give to his other son. So would he now want to give that to Esav? This is a blessing that would have been given to Yaakov. So Yitzchak, the father, responds. Let's pick up with verse 37. Lam Zayin Vayan Yitzchak. Yitzchak answered Vayomer LaEsav, and he says to his son Esav, Hein Gevir Samtiv Lach. Now he's going to go over what the blessing was. Now remember, we spent a lot of time on what the actual blessing was that was given, that Yaakov took. There were four parts to the blessing. He was given prosperity and financial in material means, wine. He's going to be given grain. Your brothers are going to take a look at it. Let's read it inside. We'll look back at verse 28.
But not the land.
Right. Not the blessing of the land of Israel, not the blessing of Abraham, of Avram. That's correct. Look at verse 28. May God give you the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth, and abundant grain and wine. People will serve you, so you'll be a national, international figurehead, and regimes will prostrate themselves to you. Be a lord to your kinsmen, and your mother's sons will prostrate themselves to you. That was the blessing that Yitzchak actually gives to, which turns out to be Yaakov. So there's material blessing, fatness of the earth, the dew of the heavens, grain and wine. Then there's this international, you'll be a nation that is served. And then within the nation, your brothers, your mother's sons will serve you. That's the blessing that's given. So now Yitzchak turns to his older son and says, what's left for me to give you? And look at the way that he says it. Hein gevir samtiv loch. Behold, a lord I have made him over you. That person, Yaakov, who received the blessing, I have made him into a lord over you. And all of your brothers are going to serve him. V'dagon v'tirosh semachtiv. And I have supported him with grain and with wine. Ulecha efo. And therefore for you, where? Ma, what? Eseh b'ni. What can I do for you, my son? Comments, questions on this verse. Okay, what do you think about the order that Yitzchak here says? Excellent, he reversed it. Now, in the actual blessing, what does he start with? Right, with the material goods, the dew and the fat of the earth, wine and the grain, and then he gets into people will serve you, and then the last thing he says is, and your brothers will serve you. And now when he speaks to Esav and he says, what's left for me to give to you, he starts going the reverse order. He starts with, what am I going to do for you? He's going to be a lord over you. All of the brothers are going to be serving him, and I have blessed him with wine and grain. What can I do for you? Excellent. That's one nice point. What else? Anything else strike you in this verse?
I'm sorry. Which verse? Well, it doesn't mention
37.
It doesn't mention the other provinces or whatever.
Okay. It doesn't mention other people, and it doesn't mention the dew of the heavens or the fat of the earth. That's not mentioned. That's true. So one thing that struck me was the, and for you, he says, where, what can I do for you? Where did we see that before? It's a funny question he asks, right? And then if you just translate in English. And for you, my son, where, what can I, what do you mean where, what? It's like a double, we saw something very similar to this on the previous page. When Esau first walks into Yitzchak and says, I'm here, I made it.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Yeah. Right, look at verse 33.
Where is
the one? Right, who, where is the one? Right, Yitzchak is totally perplexed. What do you mean you're here and you brought me the food? I just had a whole meal. I just gave the blessing. Who are you? And he says, what do you mean, who am I? I'm Esav. And Yitzchak responds with this double question of, where, who, what, who was that? And now we find the same kind of phrase when Esau says, give me a blessing. He says, give you a blessing. I gave everything to your brother. Where? What? What can I do for you? Very similar type of structure of the question. Okay. Anything else? Let's move on. 38. Lamed Ches. Vayomer Esav El Aviv. Now put yourself, your Esav. What's going through your head right now at this point? You're going through this whole story. You just... the beginning of the day, you receive this command. It's almost like going to the Haman story. Like in the beginning of the day, you're told by your father, I want to give you a blessing. Take your stuff, go out to the field, hunt me an animal, prepare it the way that I love it. And you go out there, you do everything your father asks you to do. You come in, you get yourself all dressed up. You come in with your delicacies, and your dad says to you, who are you? And in a moment, everything comes crashing. You're about to receive these big blessings. And in that question, who are you? And you say, what do you mean, who am I? I'm Esav. And your father says, what? Who? Where? Who was it that just came in? And I gave him the blessings, and indeed he's going to be blessed. And Esav's first response is, no, but bless me too. And his father says, I'm sorry, your brother came in here and deceived you. And again he says, didn't you reserve something for me? And your father says, what can I do for you? Everything that I could possibly give you, I've already given to him. Be it materially, be it rulership, he's going to lord over you. I have nothing I can give you, my son. And you're Esav. What's your response now? after what has just flipped on its head in the last 10 minutes from the previous 6 hours of being out there in the field, coming in, and now your father has said to you, after you've already asked twice for a blessing, and your father says, your brother took it. You ask again, and he says, there's nothing I can give you.
One blessing. He cries.
And he cries. Says Esav in 36, Havrocha achas gam oni avi. Esav says, have you but one blessing, Father? Bless me too, Father. Vayisah Esav kolo vayevk. And he lifts up his voice and he cries. How many times has Esav asked for blessings? Go back over this because it's very important. Look, let's go through Esav's responses here. Lamed Dalet, 34 is Esav's first response after he hears what's taken place. 34, Esav heard his father's words. He cried out an exceedingly great and bitter cry and said to his father, bless me too, Father. That's his first response. His father responds, it's too late, he took it. 36, is that why he calls me Yaakov? He took it, took away my blessing, and then he says, have you not reserved a blessing for me? Second time he asks for it. Esav, Yitzchak responds and says, there's nothing I can give you. I gave everything away. Whatever I have is Yaakov's. Third, now Esav 38, he responds again, listen to the words, have you but one blessing, Father? Bless me too, Father. What do you hear in these words?
Despair.
Anguish, right? The anguish. And it's an anguish of, I want a blessing. And look at the words he uses. Father. How many times does he use the word Father in these three requests? Right? He's three times he says. His very first request in 34, he says, bless me too, Father. And now here in 38, have you but one blessing, Father? Bless me too, Father. And then he raises up his voice and he cries. And we've already had him weeping a bitter cry before when he first hears. He now makes two additional requests after that first request when he cries. And now he raises up his voice and he weeps. Now we're going to see when we read through the commentaries, the sages are going to say, these tears are bona fide, true, heartfelt tears. And they're going to stand by Esav and his descendants instead. There are going to be problems for us that he cried such bitter tears. And they were tears of anguish of, I want a blessing too. And we're going to have to deal with that. We're going to see in the commentators how this has played itself out over the centuries and continues to play itself out over the centuries, which is why we're studying these passages in depth to see how history has played out through these stories. These are, if you read the story and you were casting this and you were putting on a play or making a film, how would you cast this scene? What does Esav look like as he's crying these tears?
Desperate.
Not a vicious, evil brother.
No.
It's not the impression you get.
No.
This is somebody who wants his father's blessings. Desperately wants his father's blessings. Right? You could almost feel bad for him, right?
I did.
Right? You hear in the words, have you not reserved a blessing for me, Father? Bless me too, Father.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
He sold his birthright.
Yes.
Didn't he realize also?
Excellent. That's one of the questions we're going to have to deal with. In other words, we have episode, as you go through this whole story, episode one is the selling of the birthright. What did he sell? What did it mean to sell a birthright? When we read this story, what's clear in this story is that Esav himself did not in any way feel that when he sold the birthright, he was selling the rights to these blessings. Because he says, A, he has outwitted me twice. One, he took my birthright. And two, he now took my blessings. If he thought when he sold the birthright that this is what he sold, he's not viewing it that way. And you see throughout the story, he feels entitled to some type of blessing and is desperate to receive from his father something. Give me something, Father. Now, we're also going to have to put on the table, there's going to be another one of the major questions as we go through, the capital Q type of question. Yitzchak, when he gave this blessing, thought he was blessing Esav, which means what did he have in mind to give to Yaakov? Right now, we see clearly, he has nothing left. He says, I can't give you anything. So when we put this all together, where's the blessing of the land? Where's the blessing of Abraham, of children that will eventually inherit the land? That hasn't been said here, but when Esav says, give me something, that's not on the table. Yaakov, Yitzchak has no, well, okay, I might as well give you the blessing of the land of Israel. That wasn't an option, even though it hasn't yet been said. But that's certainly not going to Esav, and therefore from the material blessings that I've given him, I have nothing left for you. And Esav sits there and he weeps. One of the things we'll do when we get back into the story more in depth, we're just covering the surface of the text. We're going to see where tears play a role throughout the Torah, where we see cries and heartfelt tears, the impact that they have throughout various stories. And here we have this will be an incident in which we see Esav breaks down and cries. He's given out this Mara Gedola, this bitter cry. And now he sheds tears. He raises his voice and he cries. What's Yitzchak's response? Now he's got his eldest son crying before him, pleading with him, Father, please give me a blessing. Vayan Yitzchak Aviv, and 39. Yitzchak, his father, answered and said to him, Vayomer Elav, Hinei Mishmonei Ha'aretz Yihiemo Shovecha. Behold, of the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling, and of the dew of the heavens from above. We're going to read the entire blessing, then we're going to go back and see what we could. Yeah, we're really just raising questions here more than giving answers. But let's just read the whole blessing that he now gives to him. Now, okay, let's just read, before I make any comments, let's read it through. Behold, of the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling, and of the dew of the heavens above. By your sword you shall live. But your brother you shall serve. Yet it shall be that when you are aggrieved, you may cast off his yoke from upon your neck. Okay, this is when we get to the commentators, we're for sure going to spend a lot of time on this. Excellent. The word in Hebrew is tarid, which literally means to be lowered or to take off, to remove. So we have to see. Let's just pose some of the questions. This is what Yitzchak comes up with. His son Esav is pleading, begging with him, Father, give me something. This is what he comes up with. First of all, what word is missing in these statements?
My son.
That wasn't a fair question because you can't possibly know what's in my head. What verb? What's Esav looking for?
A little love.
What specific is he looking for?
Some kind of a blessing.
A blessing. What word is missing in these two verses?
It doesn't say blessing.
Doesn't say he blessed him. It just says he said to him, which is interesting. When you know, we had the word, we pointed out, it was mentioned several times, when Yaakov first comes in, pretending to be Esav, it said several times, and Yitzchak blessed him, and he blessed him. This is the blessing that he gave him. Esav is now pleading and begging for blessing. The word isn't there. It doesn't say that Yitzchak blessed him with these two verses, but that he said it to him, these two verses. Okay, being that we're raising more questions than we're giving answers, what are some of the questions on these two verses? What are some comments, thoughts on what he gets?
Fatness of the earth, that means he got some good stuff.
Okay, fatness of the earth certainly is a reference to material stuff. Where else did we see fatness of the earth? Right, that was a blessing given to Yaakov. The blessing to Yaakov in verse 28 was, and may God give to you the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth. So that blessing was technically already given to Yaakov, that he should give you the fatness of the earth. And how is it said now to Esav? Of the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling. And you will live in the fatness of the earth.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that means. What else?
The translation of the previous blessing also said of the dew and of the fatness.
Okay.
So they're both.
Then we also have the repetition of the dew of the heavens from above, meaning that was also the blessing given to Yaakov, that you shall be given the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth. And now Esav is saying, you will live in the fatness of the earth and the dew of the heavens.
You and bless me, they who bless you.
Okay.
So he's letting him out of that when he gets aggravated.
Oh, okay. Now you're pointing out, in other words, at the end here in verse 40, It says, when you will be aggrieved, which we'll see will really mean a reference to when Yaakov throws off his yoke of his responsibility, when we Jews do not do what we need to do, then Esav will be given permission to throw off our yoke from upon his neck. Meaning the blessing that's given is, you, Yaakov, will be able to place a yoke upon Esav's head. He will work for you, so to speak, serve you. You will be dominant over him. But when you, Yaakov, or he's really, Yitzchak is now talking to Esav, when your brother Yaakov aggrieves you, we'll see, as Rashi will say, when he doesn't do what he needs to do, you, Esav, will now be given permission to remove that yoke of servitude from upon your neck. That Yaakov will only be able to, so to speak, reign over you when he's doing his job. When he does not, you, Esav, will have full permission from me to remove that yoke from upon your neck, and then you'll be a free man again to do as you please. This certainly will be a line which we're going to come back to many, many times. Historically speaking, this, so to speak, blessing statement that Yitzchak gives, in which he said he qualifies. The original blessing to Yaakov was, your brothers will serve you. And now it's qualified. Yes, your brothers will serve you, but when you don't behave, Yaakov, your brothers now have permission to remove that yoke from upon his neck, and they have free reign. This will be the idea that we're going to see throughout Jewish history. Wherever our enemies come from, the response as Jews from the times of the Torah and the prophets and Tanakh until today is never, we need to get at our enemies, but it's always, we need to do something better. Because the blessing is, peoples of the world, and your cousins, your brothers, your Arabs, you name it, will serve you, provided you, the Jews, are serving me, says God. As soon as you stop, they will remove that yoke that you're supposed to have on them, they'll remove it, and then they'll be free to do what they want. So that the response is never, how can we force the yoke back upon them? It's never the response. It's always, what do we need to be doing better as Jews? And then that yoke somehow, through the blessing, reappears. But we're going to find that, we're going to come back to this many times, that's right here in this blessing that Yitzchak gives to Esav. What else is of note in the blessing? One other phrase that we haven't mentioned yet?
By your sword
you shall live. Right? That's going to be a key phrase. In other words, the blessing to Esav is, you will live by your sword. Now that's a, not just a barbaric sense, but it's a sense of a war, might makes right, kind of society. That's a society that lives by its sword.
Well, couldn't it mean that he's a hunter, and that's why he's going to live by the sword?
Yeah.
The same.
I don't know that you would use the word sword for that. You would use the word bow or arrow, or maybe, if you wanted to just refer to the fact that he's going to be a hunter, by the sword you shall live. Certainly has the connotation of a much more, the culture of the society. It will be a society of the sword reigns, not necessarily whatever may be morals or ideals or rights. It'll be the sword will rule, is the blessing he's given. Now, the prophetic times is what the Navi describes as, you know, the swords will be, you know, beat into plowsheds and people will sin. We're in a culture of by the sword you shall live. There's 100%. That's the exile that we're living in now is the exile of Rome. And from the time of Rome until today, might has always made right. You know, if you look, world history is filled with powerful people do what they want, and war is a part of life. You know, I mean, that's, I'm not saying anything new. That's, yeah.
When in the very beginning, when Yitzchak told Esav to go out, he mentioned sharpen your gear, your sword, and your bow. So sword,
excellent.
Was something.
So sword was part of that he did take out time. Okay, so maybe it might have to do with your that it's assuming that you live by your sword as far as hunting. Okay, very good. An excellent comment. Okay, so this is what Esav gets. Esav is pleading, begging with his father for some blessing. Save something, reserve something, give me something, father. What does his father give him? We could basically sum up as, you will live in the fatness of the earth. I'll give you a place to live through your sword, and I'll give you that if your brother ever does anything wrong, you will then be able to remove his yoke from upon your neck, and then you'll have free rein, so to speak, to do back to him what you please. That's it. That's all he gives him. Yeah.
Okay, so looking right at the art scroll...
Mm-mm.
It's
don't want to hear it.
Okay.
Okay, 41, Mem Aleph. Now, the story concludes, Vayistoyim Esav es Yaakov al habrocha asher bircho oviv. Esav harbored hatred towards Yaakov because of the blessing with which his father had blessed him. Vayomer Esav bilibo, and Esav said in his heart, Yikrevu yimei evel avi, the days of mourning for my father are drawing near. Va'ahargo es Yaakov achi, and I will then kill my brother Yaakov. Now, this is the kind of response which we would have thought, we would have expected from an Esav from the beginning. But what I was trying to point out is, we don't see that in the beginning. We see this after what you would say, I feel bad for him. After this response of begging and pleading for a blessing, when he really gets almost nothing after begging and pleading his father, when the story is over, he harbors a hatred for his brother Yaakov and says, the time is going to come when I'm going to kill him. But that was not his gut response. Gut response was, give me something too. I also want a blessing. And now that he gets nothing, that all that he gets is that if his brother does something wrong, he'll be able to remove the yoke from upon his own neck, then he begins to harbor this hatred towards Yaakov. Now again, how many reasons did Esav give us why we call Yaakov Yaakov? That he's a swindler? He had two. What were the two things?
He took
my birthright and he took my blessing. And now he hates Yaakov. And how many reasons does the Torah tell us that Esav had for hating Yaakov? What does it say here?
Because of the blessing?
Only because of the blessing. Just a few verses before, Esav had said, they call him Yaakov because he outwitted me twice. First he took my birthright and now he took my blessings. And when he hates Yaakov, Torah says he only hates him because of his blessing.
I thought that was because he grabbed onto his heel, Yaakov.
That's correct. The Torah said that the reason why we call him Yaakov is because he was holding onto his heel. And now Esav renames him and says the reason why they call him Yaakov is because Akev also means to swindle or to fool, and he's outwitted me twice. One of the things we'll have to look into also as we go on is why that word has such alternate meanings. We touched on this a little bit, but first discussed this, how the word heel, which comes at the end, it's a reversal of everything that you thought was going in one direction, and at the very end, something switches. That's sort of the root of the word Akev, which means after, at the end, or to switch, to swindle, heel, and how those words are related, that the name heel is tied into that. And here Esav is naming him like that. And when we see Esav's hatred, but he only focuses on this stealing of the blessings, and he does not focus on the fact that the birthright was sold. Other comments? Yeah.
Well, also in here it says, may the days of mourning for my father draw near. So he's wishing that his father die early.
The language is if he's saying may it happen, not just Yikrevu, that it will happen soon.
The thing is, he wanted to kill Yaakov.
Does he mean he's not going to kill him until his father dies?
Correct. Yeah. That's right. So what do we see from that?
Keep it up.
That's right. We're going to see a number of references in which Esav clearly excelled in honoring his father. And with all of the hatred that he has,
he will
not do it in the days of his father's lifetime. That he will not do. You see that clearly when he's saying, he may even wish for his father to die to be able to do it. But to do it within his father's lifetime, he's not willing to do. Okay, I want to go through the rest of the story rather quickly. The rest of the story, which is going to have some important points for us, but is not going to be as critical for our purposes as until this point. Well, we do need to see the rest just for rounding out the entire story. When Rivka was told of the words of her older son, Esav, she sent and summoned Yaakov, her younger son, and said to him, behold, your brother Esav is consoling himself regarding you to kill you. I have to see exactly how to translate some of these words, that he's consoling himself. First of all, somehow it was told to her, even though Esav said it in his heart. So the Torah is clearly alluding to some element of either divine mechanisms at work, an angel telling her, or God telling her. Somehow, she finds out about that which Esav did not even verbalize out loud, but she's aware of the plans of Esav, and sends to Yaakov and says to him, your brother Esav, he wants to kill you. So now, Atal b'ni shema b'koli, listen to my voice, which is the second time we've heard her say that. Right? When Yaakov says, I don't want to dress up as my brother. My father is going to feel me out, and he's going to curse me instead of bless me. She says, listen to what I say. Alai kilalecha, upon me, any of the curses that fall upon you, I will take them. Here she says, shema b'koli, listen to my voice. Kum v'rach l'cha elavon achi charan, go to my brother, to Lavan in Charan. You will stay with him a short while, ad asher tashuv chamas achicha, until your brother's wrath subsides, ad shuv af achicha mimcha, until your brother's anger against you subsides, v'shachach eis asher asis, so he'll forget that which you have done to him, v'sholachti ulekachticha misham, I will send for you and take you from there, lama eshkol gam shnecham yomecha, why should I lose both of you on the same day? Both of whom? Her husband, right? Because when her husband dies, she knows what's going to happen next. She's going to lose her son Yaakov. So she says to him, go to Lavan. Now again, we're not going to be focusing so much on this. I just want to get the storyline. She says, when it's safe, I'll call for you and take you back. Does that ever happen?
No.
No. How long does he end up spending there?
20 years.
That's right. Some 20 years he ends up spending there until who sends him back? It's God himself calls him back. God himself says it's time to go back to your father's house. Yaakov sees that Laban isn't treating him the way that he used to, and he says, I need to get out of here. Hashem appears to him and says, return home. And then he prepares for what happens at that point again, where it's going to be episode 3. What's eventually going to happen is after those 20 years, when Laban's face changes, he's not treating him well, he's married, he's got 11 children at that point, he returns, and then we're going to have this last meeting. That's the third of the three episodes in which Yaakov and Esav appear together. On the way back, which was really supposed to be just a short while until the anger of Esav subsides, and then the mother, Rivka, says, I'll call for you and take you back home. Never happens. And then we have a meeting without Yitzchak and without Rivka in the picture anymore. We'll have the final episode, which we'll get to, who knows how long that's going to be before we get through all of these details of the commentators in this story. But that will be our final episode, is what happened there? How do they finally reconcile and then part ways again, which is going to be, we'll get to that whole story when we get there. But this is the request that Rivka makes and says, you need to get out of here, just go for a little bit, I'll call you back when it's time.
Okay, it always seems to me that when she says, I'm afraid of losing both of you, that it's a symbiotic relationship between Esav and Yaakov. Esav doesn't exist without Yaakov.
Why does it seem that way to you?
Because, I'll tell you why. Two things. One is because Esav's going to be under his brother's yoke.
Okay.
And so Esav doesn't live without Yaakov. Really? And then the other thing is that you're thinking of Cain and Hevel. You always think of Cain and Hevel. So really, both of them died because even though Cain lived after he killed Hevel, he was wandering. I mean, life was not the same. God spared his life, but he really punished him. You know, he couldn't settle down. So it doesn't seem to me that it's referring to Yitzchak at all.
Okay.
It seems to me that she's she's going to lose both of them.
So
this is going to be like a big duel, and that'll be it.
So I think on a simple shot level, which you're reading, it would be Yitzchak and Yaakov, because that's exactly what Esav had said, which had been told to her, that when my father dies, I'm going to kill Yaakov. You who have established yourself as reading below the line, are correct that Rashi is going to learn.
He caught you.
Rashi is going to learn that way.
I always thought. Okay,
I'm not saying you might always have thought that because right. Rashi says that.
Uh-huh. Right.
So you're not wrong. I'm saying you're actually right.
Right.
That Rashi will say it does mean the two brothers that somehow will die in the same day.
Right.
But I think on a shot level, just reading the story,
right,
where Esav just said, as soon as my father dies, I'm going to kill him. And
right,
she says to him, why should I lose you both on the same day?
Right.
I think a simple reading of the text would mean she's referring to, I'm going to lose my husband and then my son, because that's when Esav is going to kill him. That would be a simple reading.
Right.
You are correct. Rashi will quote from the sages that she is referring to both of the two boys dying on the same day.
Right.
That there'll be this big duel. So you're not wrong. Right. I'm just saying, as we're reading through the, as we're reading above the line at this point, just the
right.
text,
right.
I think the simple reading would mean Yitzchak and Yaakov.
Right. Okay.
And you're right, because the Torah is multi-layered, so it's true.
That's a simple question.
Yeah.
Did Esau know that Rivka was behind everything?
No, for sure not. There's no reason for anyone to have assumed that. That's correct. In other words, it's a fair point at this point in the story, and again, we're going to be dealing with all these issues. In Yitzchak's mind, who's behind this whole thing? It's all Yaakov.
Yes.
As is true in Esau's mind. No one in the story should have any reason to believe that Rivka has had anything to do with this. She is the woman behind the scenes orchestrating this event. Both elements, there's another important element when we look through the themes in the story. Rivka is the one pushing Yaakov to do it. And then Rivka is the one who pushes Yaakov out because she hears that Esav wants to kill him. So she is the woman behind the scenes in both of these instances and is working the events from behind the scenes. That is correct. But there's no reason for Esav nor Yitzchak to suspect in any way that this was Rivka's doing. Although, if anyone would have stopped and thought about it, someone would have had to put together who overheard the conversation when Yitzchak said to his son Esav, bring me the foods as I love them, so that I may bless you. And then Yaakov comes in with food prepared just the way Yitzchak loved them. Somebody has to have known that that's what Yitzchak requested of Esav. So whether or not both Yitzchak and Esav assumed that Yaakov overheard it, or they put it on Rivka's head, that I have no idea. The text does not tell us anything about that. Where they would have thought that from. But somebody, you know, it wasn't just that Yaakov snuck in and took a blessing. He snuck in and brought food. So it was clear that he knew that that's what Yitzchak had said. And if you remember the conversation that they have, when Yitzchak says to him, when Yaakov first walks in and he says, who are you? And he says, I am Esav, your eldest. I have brought you the food as you have commanded me. So it's clear that somebody intercepted the conversation. So they knew it either was Yaakov all working on his own, or if they had a conspiracy theory, they would have said it was Rivka together with Yaakov. But those are the two options.
Still, the biggest question is why did he not have anything really left over for Jacob?
Okay, hold on to that thought. We're about to get to that. Hold on to that thought. Okay, so we're reading to the end of the story just to get to the point which we want to get to, which is that point. But Thomas, in other words, let's just go for what happens. So Rivka now just pulled Yaakov aside. The mother pulls over her son Yaakov and says, you know, your brother wants to kill you. I got to get you out of here. Why don't you go to my brother, Lavan, in Haran? He'll hang out there for a little bit. When Esau's anger subsides and he forgets what happened, I'll call you home. Now, instead of then just sending him out, Rivka does something else, which is our verse now in 46, Mem Vav. Vatoma Rivka el Yitzchak, Kasti b'chayai mipnei v'nos ches. I am disgusted with my life on account of the daughters of Ches. Im lokeach Yaakov isha mivnos Ches. Ke'ela mivnos ha'aretz lama lichayim. If our son Yaakov will marry a girl from the daughters of Ches like these, she says, feh, what will life be to me if this is the kind of girl he brings home? We got to get him out of here to my family, Lavan, because otherwise he's going to be hanging around the wrong crowds of girls. This is just not what we want for him. We need to move him out. So Rivka now comes up with a story to her husband, Yitzchak, to explain why she needs to get Yaakov out. She already said to Yaakov personally, it's because your brother wants to kill you. We got to protect you. So her husband, she says, the girls here are a mess. There's no reason for me to live if our son is going to marry one of them. We got to send him off to my brother in order. Well, she doesn't even say that. She just says he can't stay here so that he shouldn't marry one of the girls. Yitzchak then calls in Yaakov in verse 1. Again, here's another example of how the Christians put in the chapter titles. We're in the middle of a story here. We're in the middle of a conversation. Literally in the middle of a conversation, we have a new chapter title. Yitzchak calls to Yaakov, Vayivarech oso, and he blesses him. Vayitzaveyu, and he commands him. Vayomerlo, and he says, Lo sikach isha mibnos Kanaan, do not take a woman, a daughter of Kanaan, as a wife. Kumlech padena aram beisa b'suel avi imecha, go to the house of b'suel, your mother's father. Take from there a wife from the daughters of Lavan, who are your cousins. So Yitzchak then gives Yaakov a command and says, go to Haran and find a daughter from your mother's family, your mother's brother Lavan, in the house of her father Besuel. There you'll find a good Jewish girl and marry one of them. And then he adds, and this is where we're going to have to, this is why we're doing all this, Kel Shaddai Yuvarechoscha, and may God, using the name of Kel Shaddai, also see why he chooses that specific name of God in this particular instance, should bless you, V'yafrecha V'yirbecha, make you fruitful and numerous, V'ha'isa L'kahal Amim, and you may you be a congregation of peoples, V'yitain L'cha as Birchos Avraham, may he grant you the blessing of Avraham, V'cha U'lezarecha Yitach, to you and to your offspring with you, L'rishtecha es eretz migurecha, so that you may possess the land of your travels, Asher Nosan Elokim LaAvram, which God gave to Avraham. Now here is that missing link that we've been waiting for. This is the where is the blessing of Avraham? Here we have it without any of this fanfare of, make me a steak, I want it fresh, I want it sumptuous, bring me wine and bread and I'll bless you. Here, almost sort of, you almost would say, off the cuff, he says, you know, Yaakov, you got to get out of here and find yourself a wife. Have a safe trip. Oh, and by the way, may God bless you with the blessing of Avram, and you be fruitful and multiply and inherit the land that he promised Avram.
Which he never said before.
Correct. So we have this huge episode of this blessing in which Yitzchak says to his son Esav, I'm going to die, make me a meal that my soul may bless you. And we have this big episode, the meal. And Yaakov comes in and he sneaks it and he steals it. Esav cries, give me something. And then, because Esav wants to kill Yaakov, Rivka says to her husband, you know, the girls here are not such good influences. We got to get Yaakov out of here. Yitzchak says to his son Yaakov, you can't marry a girl from here. Go to your mother's family, and may God bless you with the blessings of Avraham. May you be fruitful. May you multiply. May you inherit the land that God promised Avraham. And he sends him off.
Was he so married to the two girls at this time?
The two sisters?
No.
The
daughters
of
Chais.
Yeah, Esav is married to the two girls, yeah. That was the beginning.
Two
women from Chais.
Yes.
No, excellent. In other words, the beginning of our story, the very beginning.
Yeah.
The last two verses of chapter 26,
yeah,
before we got to chapter 27, which was the stealing of the blessings, said that Esav hit 40. And he married two women from B'nai Ches. These are the same women that Rivka is now saying. Remember, those women were a source of discomfort for Yitzchak and for Rivka. And now Rivka says, these women are making me crazy. I have no purpose in life if our son Yaakov will also marry women from here like our other son Esav did. We got to get him out. Yitzchak says, that's right, get out of here. Go to your mother's brother. Find women in that family over there to marry, and then he gives them the blessing of Abraham and the blessing of the land. So this is a conclusion. We can sort of read the last things just quickly. If you read verse 5, Yitzchak sent away Yaakov and he went to Padan Aram, to Lavan, to the brother of Rivka, the mother of Yaakov and Esav. And when Esav saw that Yitzchak had blessed Yaakov and sent him off to Padan Aram to take him wife, and he blessed him and commanded him, saying, do not take a wife from here. That's exactly what he did, that Yaakov obeyed his father and his mother. And Esav perceived that the daughters of Canaan were evil in the eyes of Yitzchak, and so he took from Yishmael some wives for himself in addition to the ones that he already had. That's sort of the end of our story. What's going to happen now is the story is going to break, and we're going to learn all about Yaakov's journey to Lavan. We're going to learn about all that took place there over the next 20 years, primarily how he marries his four wives, two sisters, Rachel and Leah, and then now that whole next parsha until he returns. And then that's going to lead us into the third episode, as I mentioned a few moments ago, that's going to be our third episode of that return meeting. But we're nowhere near ready for that. Now we're going to go back starting next week, Meretz Hashem, and we're going to go back over to this episode and see all of the nuggets that we have to mine in this story, what took place, all the questions that we've raised, hopefully we'll find answers to, as far as the blessings that were actually given. Where do these blessings that we just read about now at the very end of the story, in which he sends them off with the blessings of Avraham, the blessings of the land, where does that fit into this entire equation, and all of the other great questions that have been raised along the way as far as this episode goes. So Meretz Hashem, next week, we'll start going through back to the beginning of this episode with Rashi and Ramban and Refersh and hopefully some others as we go through it. For those of you who are interested, tonight at 7:45 I'm talking about Purim and getting dressed up and changing clothing for that, and we'll be touching upon this story, how Yaakov puts on the clothing of Esav in order to go in, and how that fits into our Purim story. And there's a lot that's tied into this particular story. If you're not there tonight, it's fine. When we get back into the details of this story, we'll go over that at greater length as well. Alright, enjoy. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.